We began last time looking at the book of Proverbs. We looked at the first seven verses of chapter one. We saw that we looked at that and called it, if you like, the preface of Proverbs. We considered a little bit the preacher of Proverbs, that's Solomon and others, of course. And we considered the purpose of Proverbs and the pedestal of Proverbs, the purpose being verses 2 to 6, and then the pedestal, the foundation, if you like, of the whole book and of the Christian life being verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. And the next part of the first chapter moves on with these opening words, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother." This first part of the book, this is a distinctive part, as you will see, it stretches through to chapter 9, and it is concerned greatly with wisdom, and it personifies wisdom. And then if you look beyond chapter 9, you will see that chapter 10 begins the Proverbs of Solomon, and then there is a long passage where there are many, many Proverbs, one after the other. Of course, there are Proverbs here, but they're of a different style. This part of the book particularly is aimed most especially, you won't be surprised to hear, at the young, at the spiritually inexperienced. But we all have a great need for wisdom and understanding. There's plenty here for all of us. So verse 8 says, "My son." Well, there are recurring characters in the book of Proverbs. You might say that you can imagine that the book has a protagonist who is a young man. And this young man, you could say, has a mother and a father. He is set in some kind of domestic situation, perhaps working in a family farm, something like that. It seems that he has a young lady, either a young bride or one he is betrothed to, one who cares for him. So there is mum and dad and a young man and a young lady, and there are other characters too. And we meet one particular group of characters in this passage. But the picture of the family is strong in Proverbs. And it may seem that what the family does, family business, family farm, family life, is dull and mundane and boring, and there is so much more excitement beyond the fields, beyond the fences, beyond the walls of the family compound. But here we have the instruction of your father and the law of your mother. In the picture, the family rules, the wisdom that has come from father and mother to their son in different ways, and it is wisdom which is from the Lord, of course. And their wisdom, their law, their instruction, says the book, they will be a graceful ornament to your head and chains about your neck. Signs of identity and honour and wealth. And more than that, there is the graceful ornament could be said to be like a victor's garland on the head. The chains around your neck, well, chains of responsibility and position and all of these things. But the call of verse 7 that we saw last time, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction," becomes practical here in this first part of the book. Because we can read that and we can think, well, yes, I'm all right. I fear the Lord. I don't despise wisdom and instruction. I read the Bible. I listen to the preaching ministry on a Sunday. I've got my devotional book. I've got these other books I read. I pay attention to what God's word says. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. I fear God. I'm not a fool. I don't despise what his word has to say. But the question is, What about sin? What about sin? How do we deal with sin? How do we resist sin? How do we face down sin? How do we overcome sin? Because it's all very well saying, I fear the Lord. I know His, I read His word. Okay, what do you do when temptations come? And this is exactly what comes to the young man in the context of his family, his wise and loving family and his upbringing. There is a group of characters that pop up several times in Proverbs, and you could call them, I suppose, the neighborhood gang. They are a bunch of violent and criminal types who will do anything for money and for advantage. Here is the point, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And when it says sinners here, it's not saying that you're not a sinner and everyone else is, or other people are. It's not saying that the son is not sinful, because we've all sinned. It is those who are here. It means those who are conspicuously open in their sin, proud of their sin, reveling in their sin. That's what is referred to. If sinners entice you, do not consent. Here is the first point about temptation. If temptation comes, deny it. Of course, it's obvious. Do not consent. You've got to cut it off. You've got to not even entertain it. But temptation will come, and it will seem just so exciting. It will be tailored precisely for you, because the enemy of souls knows what you're like. He has observed you. He knows where your weaknesses lie. He knows what is likely to work. Well, here come the sinners, the neighborhood gang, and they say, come with us. Let us lie in wait to shed blood. Ooh, that doesn't sound very attractive. That sounds like rather a strange way to start. Well, this young man has all he needs on the family farm. But what's coming along here is a group of younger men with street cred. They are cool, I suppose. They're rough and ready. They're not afraid. They're not afraid to open their enticement with these words. This is what we're going to do. We're going to be out mugging people. We don't care if they die. We don't care if they go down to the pit. Come with us. Come with us. Let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. It's very much that picture of highway robbery, of hiding behind the rocks and the boulders, and ambush and robbery and whatever else may follow. Let us swallow them alive, like Sheol, like the grave, and whole, like those who go down to the pit. This is something way beyond the everyday, the ordinary, the humdrum. This seems exciting. It might be incredibly violent, and of course it is very, very wicked, but it certainly might seem exciting if your life feels a little bit ordinary, perhaps. And just in case you're thinking, no, I know it's wrong to steal, I know it's wrong to wound, I know it's wrong to murder, well, the reference they make to hell is clear enough, to the grave, to death. They don't seem to care about that. But there's a hook. There's a bait. Verse 13. Look what you get. Look what you get. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. I still remember as a child, we would get cereal boxes, have cereals at breakfast every day. And there would always, of course, be competitions, giveaways, maybe something in the bag that you would all fight over. and or tokens to collect or whatever, or there'd be a club to join, just send off 35p, and it's probably a lot more than that now. And I can just remember it was about, you know, send this off to this address, take these coins to the card. It all seems so old-fashioned now. But it's so often said on the box, look what you get. Those big letters. I remember as a child thinking, as you sit there, you're eating, and it says, look what you get. And you think, ooh, you get that and that and that. If you join the whatever cereal club or whatever it is, look what you get. And this is what they're saying. In a completely different context, of course. Yes, 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 we're going to do these violent things. We're bold, we're brave, we're unafraid, we're going to shed blood, we're going to wait for the innocent, we don't care. Look what you get. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Identify with us. Verse 14, cast in your lot among us. Let's all have one purse. It's almost a family pitch. It's almost a pitch, a sales pitch to him. Leave your family. Don't listen to your mum and dad. Come with us. We'll be your family. We'll be your closest. We'll have a common purse. We'll all look after each other. Strange thing to trust the word of someone who says they're going to kill other people and yet they're going to look after you. What do your mum and dad know? Forget the fear of the Lord. Forget honouring your mother and father. Come on, you're not a fool. That wisdom instruction and instruction is boring. Let's all have one purse. There's a camaraderie in this. Do you see how strong and how subtle this temptation is to a young man, perhaps, who feels that he's not got enough responsibility, who feels perhaps that, well, Dad's still running things around here. I can't do the things I want to do. I haven't got the opportunities I want. I can't achieve the wealth, perhaps. He's in time, all this will be his, but the temptation is, I want something now. I don't want to be under anyone's authority. This is attractive in its own way. It is terrible, but it's a big, attractive, and ambitious pitch. There he is working perhaps on the farthest field, and the gang comes along the nearest road, and they will be calling to him, come with us, join with us. It's a crisis. Does this young man fear the Lord? Consider the wisdom of his father. His father knows this temptation will come. His father gives the warning in advance. And this is very much the character of the Word of God and the character of the book of Proverbs and the wisdom of God. There is no temptation that comes to us that the Bible doesn't warn us about. There is nothing new in any temptation or any sin that any of us ever has to deal with. It's all here. It's all anticipated. Do we fear the Lord? Will we hear the instruction of our father and mother, as it were? Do we fear the Lord? Or do we despise wisdom and instruction? Do we go along with the gang? And I'm not talking about murders and muggings. As you say, well, come on, that's not something I'm going to do. No, Near Eastern society all those years ago would be very different. There wouldn't be a police force to come after you, and there may be much less likelihood of justice catching up with you for your evil deeds. But that's not the point. Do you go along with the temptations? Those who say, well, come and gossip with us. Come and slander with us. Come and despise and scorn others with us. It's not only the young who are tempted. We will all be tempted with different sins at different times, according to our character, according to our position in life, according to our general demeanour and our age. All these things, there are tailored arrows, darts that will be fired in at different times. You may not be joining the young, cool street gang. You may be tempted to come and join the comfortable and indifferent middle-aged gang that says, well, you were enthusiastic for the Lord once, but you've grown up now. See, you've got your comfortable house now. You've got a responsible job, or maybe you've just retired, or whatever it might be. Your children are a little older, whatever. You're comfortable now. Get comfortable. Dig in. Don't really bother yourself with the service of God. Don't bother yourself with going out. Oh, go to church. Maybe just go once. Just do what's comfortable. Anything gets in the way, let it be. That's fine. It's the comfortable and indifferent middle-aged gang. What about the cantankerous and difficult elderly gang? Now, come and moan with us. Come and talk about how nothing is what it used to be. Come and complain constantly. Come and do this, come and do that. There are always different sins into which we can fall at different stages of life. But this is a serious matter. It's a young man with a great temptation. And here is the counsel, verse 15. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. Don't approach the road. When you're working the fields and the gang comes, don't come closer to hear what they're saying to you. Come away. Come home. When they approach you, walk the other way. Certainly, don't fall into step with them. Don't walk in the way with them. Maybe the road skirts the property and they say, just walk with us a while as we pass by your property. Don't do that. Don't get into step with evil doers. Don't spend time with them on their terms. Don't give sin the first opportunity. It's there at the beginning. If sinners entice you, do not consent. Don't go walk with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. It can be so very enticing. We see it from the very beginning. Along came the serpent. Along came Satan, and he said to Eve, has God really said those things? You will not surely die. So subtle, so enticing. Just come and walk with us for a minute. We'll tell you about some of the things we've done. We'll show you some of the things that we have. Look at these jewels we have collected. Look at this wealth that we have. Look at what we have. Don't go. And the father says, their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Now, Dad, come on. Come on. You could say, is this just the hysteria of a panicking parent? Now, I think we have all either practiced or experienced at some point or other the hysteria of a panicking parent. And maybe it's the case that sometimes when we don't want our children, or when our parents didn't want us to do a particular thing, that they would maybe exaggerate a little bit. Oh, you don't want to go with them, they do this and that. And maybe it was true, maybe it wasn't. Or this might happen, or that might happen. You say, is this hysteria? Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. No. Mum and Dad can be unfair. They can exaggerate things sometimes. But no, this gang are wicked, and they are utter fools. Look at verse 17. Surely, in vain, the net is spread in the sight of any bird. Now, some people disagree as to what this verse means, what it refers to. I read it, and this is just me, and there are people who agree with me and people who disagree. I read it in context as being this. Here is the gang. They're boasting about what they are doing. But the father is just about to say that they are going to pay for their own crimes. They are going to fall into their own trap. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. The trap they set is going to entangle them. Any bird, seeing the trap being set, will not go in, will fly away. But these are such fools that they do these things, they prepare these things, and then fall right into them. That's the way it reads to me, because it continues in verse 18. They lie in wait for their own blood. They're full of boasts. We're going to shed blood. We're going to lurk secretly for the innocent. We're going to send them down to the grave. Because we are the young and we are the powerful. We are the popular ones. But their own blood will be shed. Their own lives will be lost as a result of their skulking around by the roadside. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. Verse 19, it takes away the life of its owners. What's this about? Well, it has the clearest echo. The ways of everyone who is greedy for gain takes away the life of its owners. What shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? That's the echo. Eternal loss is the ultimate consequence. This passage demonstrates a key feature of Proverbs. The wisdom is practical, but it is always, almost always, profoundly spiritual and concerned with the fate of the soul. The gang is completely indifferent to death and the grave. They boast about it. We're going to send other people to the grave. But they are headed for the grave just as well. And the young man's parents are warning. The father is warning him about the loss of life. We say, well, these are big issues. Surely there's no way that someone would get into something like this. There's no way. Well, who knows if he is working hard on the farm, day after day after day. Perhaps he is out alone in the field, working on a particular project, and he feels unloved, unappreciated. He's putting so much effort in, he feels like, oh, I'm not even working for myself. I'm just doing this for Dad. It's he that's going to benefit from what I'm doing, not me. There's so much in the young life and the young mind that can tend toward resentment. There is so much fertile ground for it. There is a hard battle to be fought in the mind and in the conscience and for the soul of this young man. This temptation is fierce. You may look at this and say, that doesn't entice me at all. I'm sure I can find something, not me. Because I don't know. But I know that the enemy of souls can find at least something that will entice every single one of us. There will be something. There may be more than one something. There will be things that entice us and will call us away from the Father's service and say, come with us. And it's so attractive and it's so tempting. Fierce temptation has to be resisted, and a calculation has to be made. Eternal wealth has to be brought into the equation. This is so important. This is something big in Proverbs. Not just looking at the here and now. Not just looking at, look what you get now. But consider the eternal riches that are laid up for us in and through Christ Jesus. I remember a song we used to sing around the piano. I met Jesus at the crossroads, where the two ways meet. Satan, he was standing there and he said, come this way. Because lots and lots of treasures I can give to you today. But I said, no, there's Jesus here. Just see what he offers me. Down here, my sins forgiven. Up there, my home in heaven, praise God. That's the life for me. The pitch is strong. The pull is powerful. Mustn't be underestimated. There's a surefire route, so it seems, to riches and importance and belonging. Be one of the gang. Be one among equals. No more authority. No more being under dad. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. My son, hear the instruction of your father. Honor your father and mother. These things are so connected, but so difficult sometimes. What will become your master if you go with the gang? It will be your appetite and your greed. Justice and mercy will fall by the wayside, will be abandoned. The innocent will suffer. And so it is with all rebellion against God and all turning to sin. We become mastered by the things to which we capitulate. We become slaves of the things which promised us enjoyment and freedom and liberty. We need these warnings, don't we? These things seem so basic, but human nature is to defy authority. It's wired into us. We've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We live in a fallen creation. We are fallen men and women. We will by nature rebel. We will defy. Why do children love the stories of outlaws and pirates and all of that, especially little boys? Oh, they're outside the norms. They're on the edge. They're taking risks. They're bending the rules. And that all seems so exciting. I've heard it well said, may seem like a strange observation, that actually the most dangerous thing for children and young people in the Harry Potter series of films and books is not the tongue-in-cheek witchcraft side of it, which is put across in a fairly light-hearted way. It is actually the way in which the main characters perpetually and continually break the rules and are justified by the story and the storyline in the book in constantly defying authority, constantly breaking the rules. That is the most dangerous side to these things. This is human nature. We don't want to listen to mum and dad. We don't want to listen to the teachers. We certainly don't want to listen to the preachers. They're boring. I want to direct myself and my own life. But we think we are directing ourselves and we're being directed by darker forces. Remember, sin will always speak so gently, so affably, so reasonably, so enticingly. Easy excitement, wealth and power. See what they say, the language. All kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Till someone comes and burgles you, yes. But it's so attractive. And this world is full of so many things. Things which in and of themselves may be innocuous, but can be abused. Other things which need to be avoided. Think about drugs. Think about alcohol in so many cases. Abused. Becomes a master, not a servant. petty dishonesty. Oh well, I've got too much change at the till. Doesn't matter. Honest mistake. I'll keep it. That's the beginning. That's where it begins. Just the little temptation not to give it back. Not to give what you owe someone else back. No, I'll just hold on to that. Gambling. Oh, all the advertising for gambling is great these days. They've banned all the advertising of cigarettes and other things, so now they've restricted the advertising of alcohol, so now they're advertising gambling as much as they can, and they put the little icon up, gamble aware, gamble responsibly, do this, do that. Yeah. It may be a little game for some people. It may be harmless for some people, but how many people can't control it? Sexual immorality. Well, that's everywhere now. Oh, but you can do what you want. You can live as you like. You don't have to wait for marriage to be intimate with somebody. No, just find that person and go with them, and then, oh, it's over. Find another. It all seems so innocuous, so often, to start with. But the more we give in, the further we will go. We will become like those spoken of in Jeremiah 14, who love to wander, who do not restrain their feet. Sin has its attractions. We must listen to the warnings against it. Because sin has attractions, but only one destination. It leads us to hell, to everlasting loss. Psalm 7, verses 15 and 16. I'll read from 14. The wicked brings forth iniquity. He conceives trouble and brings forth falsehood. He made a pit and dug it out, and has fallen into the ditch which he made. His trouble shall return upon his own head, and violent dealing shall come down on his own crown. This is reality. Think of Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, who was greedy. His greed led him to have leprosy. Think of Haman, hung on the gallows that he built for Mordecai in the book of Esther. We need to escape from sin and lay hold of the promises that God has for us. The promise is right at the beginning of the passage in verse 9. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head, and chains about your neck. Faithfulness leads to victory and power. The chain of authority, the garland of victory. This is the constant theme of the scriptures. And yes, these things are hard work. Yes, this is a hot battle. But blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. Blessed is that man. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. May God grant us grace and strength to deal with temptation, to identify temptation, to see it coming as the gang comes along the road. Walk away. Come back toward the farmhouse. You can tend to that field another time. May God grant to us grace and strength to deal with the enticements of the enemy of our souls. I even forgot to mention what I called this message. sin's subtle snare. Sin is subtle. It will trap us. It will bring us down. We have an enemy. We must resist him. May God help us in these things.